All right, Marty Lurie here with Frank Robinson. Frank, baseball, I always say you can look at the United States history through the eyes of baseball. And you came from Oakland, Cincinnati Reds, and coming through the minor leagues in those days into Cincinnati. Challenges you faced, what was it like for you as a young man coming into baseball?
I came in Columbia, South Carolina. That's where the Reds sent me for my first full season. I started out when I got out of high school in Ogden, Utah. And it was tough because there were cities like in that league, Montgomery, Alabama, Macon, Georgia, Columbus, Georgia. And I had never heard such language in my life that I heard when I first went to that league. And I was really taken aback, because I didn't think people would talk like that to another person. But they called myself and one other person named John Jackson was on the team with me. And we heard everything. It's not repeatable. And I wouldn't even think about repeating it. But it was something that I had never heard of, never thought of, and didn't think I would hear it from any individual.
Who was a manager for you in those early days in the minor leagues, and did they help?
Well, for the half a season when I came out of high school, it was Earl Brucker in the Class C. And it was Ernie White at Columbia. And that was the two managers that I had in the minor leagues. And Ernie White was a Southerner.
Good pitcher.
Yep, and he didn't mind speaking his mind, just like it wasn't a black face in the crowd. And wasn't much I could say as a youngster. I'm not going to challenge the manager about his language, but he was rough. But he was not rough during the game. It's like in the clubhouse when you're talking about the other club or whatever, he would say things like say I wasn't even in the room. And it was tough. It was tough mostly on the road when we went on the road, because we stayed at a home in Columbia, South Carolina, and the lady there really took care of us. She had a room for us. It was a house that was pure white with a little red brick fence around it, and it just stood out in the neighborhood. And she said, but I don't cook. You have to go around the corner if you want to eat. And we did. We went around the corner to a cafe. And it wasn't bad. It wasn't bad. And you could get a steak for less than $10. And it was good eating. And that was probably the only thing that really kind of saved me and John during the course of the season, that we could go around there and eat, and we could have peace and quiet at there when we was at home. And we went on the road, boy, it was rough.
Frank Robinson with us. Frank, spring training, and I talked to Bill White about it, and I remember Earl Wilson, the things that he said, and Tommy Harper, the things that he said. What was spring training like with the Reds for you?
Well, spring training was like we were separated from the club. The other players stayed downtown or stayed in houses with their families, and we had to stay in the Plaque part of the city. And we didn't see, the only time we saw our teammates was at the ballpark, and that was rough. But again, too, we stayed in a private home, and we were treated well by the owner of the the house. And when I was at Columbia, when I was with went up to
Tampa,
yeah. In spring training, I'm sorry. Yeah. And her name was Miss Annie, and she had three meals for us, two meats, different meats every day on the table. And we could eat as much as we wanted to in the room, eat, and run in the refrigerator for $35 a week.
Wow.
So that was good. Plus, we didn't have to put up a curfew or nothing like that.
You said, interestingly, that to be an African-American player in the big leagues in those days, you had to be a star. And you had George Crow on that team. You had Bob Thurman on that team, some very good players. We had Hank Thompson in the National League for a while. What were those players like?
They were good. They were older players, and they were kind to me. They didn't teach me the ropes, but they were the ones I had to run with. And after ball games and whatever, I had to go hang on the end of a bar counter and wait till they were ready to go back to the hotel and go back. And to this day, I think that's why I enjoy drinking Cokes, because that's all I would drink. And but they took care of me. They looked after me and talked to me about the pitfalls of being in the league. And I couldn't lose my cool. Don't let it get to you. And the main thing is just pretend you don't hear it and going about your business. Because the main thing is do well and get to the big leagues and get out of here.
As a young man in Oakland, and you had come from Texas to Oakland, when did you first hear of Jackie Robinson? And you were an American Legion national champion as a young man, and of course you were always a great player. Sam Berkovich, you were one of his favorites. But when did you first hear of Jackie?
Well, I heard of Jackie when he broke the barrier, when he was signed by the Dodgers, sent to... I sent to AAA Montreal. You know, baseball didn't come past St. Louis in those days, so I wasn't too up to date on it and didn't follow Major League Baseball. My Major League Baseball was AAA, Pacific Coast League, and that's where I followed the Oakland A's or whatever. And I was looking forward to them signing me and me having maybe a career with them. And I didn't think about the big leagues, and I didn't have a big league ball club that I followed.
So why the Cincinnati Reds? How did that happen?
Well, it happened because the scout that eventually signed me was with the White Sox initially. And he used to follow an American Legion team to look at a player named J.W. Porter. And can't miss prospect. He was a bonus boy. And he was a stud, about 215 then, 220, could run, could throw, could hit for power, can't miss. But he did miss, and it's just unbelievable. But the year before I graduated, he was with the White Sox, and the year that I came out of high school, he had left the White Sox and came with Cincinnati. So he had kept his eye on me when he was following J.W. Porter on the American Legion team, and he started contacting me and my mother and telling me how much he cared about me and how much he would like to sign me when I did graduate. And the one thing about Bobby, he seemed to care about you as a person, not just as a player. Yeah. And that stuck in my mind, and it stuck also in my mother's mind. And she was happy to allow him to sign me when I did graduate. But I wanted also, I was happy to be going to a smaller organization than the White Sox, say. And I figured if in a smaller organization, I had a better chance to get into the major leagues quicker. Yeah. So I was happy about Bobby being there and signing me. They took care of me. I graduated in June, and he drove a teammate of mine from Acclimates and I to Ogden, Utah in June to start the year. I said, my God, he couldn't even give us a bus ticket or anything. So I started out there. I played in 72 games in Ogden and had 72 RBIs, 20 home runs, and hit 340. And then Gabe Paul, the general manager of the Reds, wanted to try to make a second baseman out of me going into the following year at AAA. And I said, I've never played infield other than third base. And I said, when I went to Ogden, I told y'all to get me out of that infield because I killed somebody in the stands with my throws. And you did that, so now you want me to go back and be a second baseman and play a position I never played before? At the level that I was going to be playing at? And he said, yeah, you'll be dynamite with that power of yours or whatever as a second baseman. So I tried that for 8 games at Tulsa. And on an off day, we had come home off the road, and on an off day, they called me out to the ballpark the next day and told me they were going to send me down. And I said, why? He said, because you're not fancy enough around second base. I didn't make any errors. And I did what the manager, back in those days, you did what the manager told you to do. And he told me I couldn't hit with my hitch. He said, you got to keep that bat still. So I tried it for 8 games. I hit the ball that way. I had all singles. And when I did go, I said, okay, I'll go. I went down to Columbia, South Carolina. And the first day, Ernie White made the lineup out for the season. He said, you're going to go play second base, right? I said, no. He said, well, what do you mean? No, I said, I'm not playing second base. He said, well, where are you going to go? I said, I'm going to left field. And I went out to left field, and he had to put somebody else in to play second base. And that's where I played until I hurt my arm at the end of the year, and I couldn't throw. No. So I came back the following year. They wanted to send me to Tulsa. I said, nope. They didn't want me last year. I'm not going back there. They said, well, where do you want to go? I said, I want to go back to Columbia. And they said, okay. They sent me back to Columbia. I couldn't throw. It hurt to throw like that. So they put me first base. I couldn't throw the ball around the infield in between innings. I couldn't throw the ball back to the pitcher. I couldn't throw a ball to any base if a runner was taking liberties. And that went on until August. I was in and out of the hospital. And in those days, you would throw it. It was supposed to throw the hurt out. Throw the hurt out. I would throw for 2 weeks, go stay in the hospital for a week. Throw for 2 weeks, go stay in the hospital. And it affected my hitting, too, because I couldn't get through with the top hand. And so finally, the 1st of August, I said to myself, I'll talk to myself a lot in those days. I said, that's it. I'm not going to throw for 2 weeks. Not going to pick up a baseball for 2 weeks. And I did that, and it came around a little bit. To this day, it still bothers me, and it bothered me at the major league level. Every spring, I had to work a long time to try to be able to throw the ball. And I did that, and I had a great August and a great September down there. And I went to spring training again, and I had a tough time in spring training, too, because they wanted me to throw from the outfield. And I said, I can't play the outfield because I can't get the ball back in. They said, well, just go out there, and we'll have the shortstop come out and get the ball from you. And I said, okay, spring training. The first time any of them out there is to hit a ball in the gap. I get to the ball first. I turn around and fire it to the shortstop. And my arm went dead. And when I came in, the manager got all over me. He said, I thought I told you not to throw. I said, instincts. You can't tell a player what you're doing. When you get out there between those white lines, the instincts take over. So I nursed it. And Bertie Tavis took me to the big leagues. And I made it, but I still had trouble throwing until about 2 months into the season. My arm would come around pretty decent. And I had a good first year because I had a lot of big bombers around me that they didn't pay any attention to me. And I had a good year, and I enjoyed the year.
All right. Frank, it's a pleasure to have you here. As I said earlier, there's Jackie Robinson and Frank Robinson, and you did pick up the mantle for him. And it's very important that you're a very important person in social history and baseball history.
Well, thank you. It's very kind for you to say that. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Frank.